This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 344 for Wednesday, January 8th, 2020. We're in the future. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me at the first show of 2020 is Megan Townsend. You can find her at O Megan Townsend on all the social media that matters, including upcoming Twitch. I'm putting the pressure on. Hi, Megan.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, you and I, just in our little pre-show amble, we're talking about getting ready to stream, and I think it's exciting that you're going to be doing some streaming on Twitch.
I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know. I just, again, it's still just trying to figure out the tech side of things, like the actual logistics of the streaming, but I have a lot of things that I'd like to play. My roommate just bought a PS4. Literally yesterday, and she's like, I'm stupid. I'm buying it purely to play the new Final Fantasy game when it comes out, and that's it. That's what I'm playing it for. That's exactly what she's buying it for, and hopefully I can, you know, at some point, I'd really like to dig into The Last of Us again. I have my friend was nice enough to add me as a family to connect him to his stream. His Steam. Thank you. His Steam library. So he has a bunch of games on there that I can dig into. And of course, coming back to
the to clarify, the Steam would be on PC. You've got a PC and a PS4 in the house.
Yes. Yeah. And a Mac as well. So I have a PC and a Mac and a PS4. I think I have every iteration of the PlayStation except for the first one.
Cool.
Various games. I just need to get a capture card, I think, first before I can do any console gaming.
Oh yeah, to do console, you'd have to do like a capture card.
Yeah. So that's probably won't be happening right away, but definitely Minecraft at some point soon.
Nice. Yeah, I was streaming a lot over the holidays. It's funny because I've been online and doing stuff on mic. I feel like I've been podcasting, but I haven't. This is the first show since before the holidays. I spent a good chunk of my Christmas after Christmas had passed, Boxing Day through New Year's. I basically did a daily stream, and it wasn't scheduled. It wasn't any particular order. I kind of played what I wanted when I wanted and shared it with some folks. And I'm excited for you because I it's a lot of fun. I really kind of got a handle on it, and I find it a lot easier, probably because of my podcasting experience. And you've got a good chunk of podcasting experience in your belt too. I find it easier than YouTube. YouTube stuff, I found that I wanted to make it perfect. Like if I screwed up on a phrase, or if I did something, or if I had a plan, I had a very specific order in which I wanted to present the videos. And before Christmas, I stopped doing a lot of YouTube stuff for reasons we won't get too into, but YouTube changed a lot of their policy stuff. And so I was like, where do I want to put my time? And ultimately I was getting more community growth, more enjoyment. And in terms of the time sink, putting the time into Twitch seemed to be the better investment. Plus, I found that I was recording Twitch streams with the idea that they were being turned into YouTube videos. So for half of 2019, I was taking my Twitch VOD and chopping it up into a YouTube video. And that worked, but it did put a little bit of pressure on the Twitch experience. Whereas around November, I decided, you know what? I'm just going to take a couple months and test this out. I need to stop being so... what's the word I'm looking for? Not picky, but I need to stop overthinking this and just start doing what a lot of other people are doing, which is just put out a Twitch stream that only exists as a Twitch stream, and that's it. It does not end up for any, it's for no other purpose. It's a live experience. If you miss it, tough. And as a streamer, which is weird to say out loud, I've found that much more enjoyable. No pressure. Right. If I decide to stare at a screen and not say anything for 90 seconds, that's fine. Like, I, you know, it's a lot more casual and it's a lot more fun, I think, for me. I still might do a combination of both in the new year when it comes to YouTube, because I do like YouTube for the discoverability. Like, I think their algorithm in terms of popping videos up in front of people is better than Twitch's. Anecdotally, I don't know the data behind that, but I find that a lot more people will discover me via the SponChunks YouTube channel and then find the Twitch later, you know? So I feel like as a loss leader, I need to at least keep up some YouTube videos. And really, in terms of Minecraft, which is a lot of what I do on Twitch, YouTube is the big stick, right? I mean, Twitch has got a lot of Minecraft, but YouTube has got way more. you're gonna find an audience much larger over there. So, I'm excited for you because I think that I've really sort of enjoyed sharing that kind of stuff. I did an art stream actually just earlier this week when I was working on designing some emotes for Twitch for Pixel Riffs, my co-host on the SponChunks. And so it's been nice to be able to get comfortable enough with the tech on the back end that you can just kind of stream what you want when you want. And that comes with time. Like, that just comes with like finding a workflow, finding out what windows you want open on your second monitor and kind of like going from there. And I'm sure that once you get going and find a rhythm, it'll seem a little bit less daunting and you can just focus on the game and what you want to do and things like that. But if you're open for some advice, don't make the same mistake that I made, and just nothing is precious. Like, just, you know, put it out there. If you screw up, then you screw up. It's fine. You just, it's always an iterative process. And I always put too much pressure on myself the first few times that I was streaming. First few months. And I wasn't getting enough enjoyment out of it. And until I let go, especially over the holidays when I played a new game, which I'll talk about later in the show today, because it wasn't Minecraft, I felt like less of a, I need to make this look good, because like, I don't do a podcast about Satisfactory. I've never played it before. I loaded it up and played the first minutes of it live. So it's just like, of course I'm not going to have any idea what I'm doing, and that's okay. You know? And I find that with that kind of experience,
kind of the funny part too, though, right? Like, a lot of people who, you get some of the popular gaming YouTubers who do that too. Like, they load up a game. And they basically, they just do like a live, they do like a Twitch stream without the live aspect of it. Mm-hmm. They just kind of record their reactions to it. They happen. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that. I mean, and for me, Twitch is not going to be serious.
No.
So, I mean, if you're screwing up or doing terribly in a game, it's funny at that point. And I'm a really bad gamer. So this is just going to be an exercise in me failing royally for a live audience to witness. So that's kind of, it's a spectacle for all of you. You can all laugh.
You'll need a decent emote for something, like instead of Omega and Townsend, you need like an oh no or a or a oh fail or something.
So my login username at work is OMGN, but a lot of people think it's oh my god no. And I have half a mind to just make it oh my god like OMG. I have half a mind to change it to that. I might, because it's nice and it'll be like symmetrical sort of on each side, but also just, I don't know, just kind of funny. So I should probably just be like, oh my god, no. And I thing that I do, apparently, my boyfriend makes fun of me so much. Apparently I do this thing where I always go like, no, like I pitch my voice up really high when I say no, or I'll be like, no.
When you're gaming?
Well, in general, about anything. It's like a thing I just do all the time. Huh. So now he always makes fun of me where he's always just like, no, he just like makes fun of me all the time for doing this stupid voice. So I feel like now I need to make like an emote that's like wailing in the distance with like, you know, no or no. Something in the background.
Right on.
So, yeah.
Fun. I have to work on my own emotes. I don't really know what to do. As long as I've been streaming, we don't really have any like memes, or we've got a couple of commands like Joel's a perfectionist. And when something goes wrong, I've got a command where it quotes Han Solo from Star Wars. Like, we're fine. Amazing. Everything's fine. We're all fine. How are you? Like, just stuff like that. And when you, like, you've fallen down a hole in Minecraft or like something like that. And some of the mods will use them. And I think my favorite new one is some people will lurk. You know, they'll say, hey, I'm not really here. So I'm watching, but I'm not going to type anything because I'm at work or whatever. And so we've got lurking. And then you just do a command lurk. And then the chat room will say, you know, username is... isn't here right now, but they're crawls under a rock to watch, always watching, like just a little funny like that.
Is that with Nightbot that you're doing that?
Yeah, so Nightbot. And they're really easy to set up. The hard part is remembering to turn specific ones on and off, like, so for example, and we can get into Satisfactory in a minute, but Satisfactory is a game I'm new to, but it's not new, it's been out for a while now, 6 or 8 months, and it's had 2 updates. It's an early release, but there's a lot of people out there that have played through it already. And one of the favorite pastimes of Twitch people is to come in and backseat game or just tell you what to do, despite the fact that you've labeled your Twitch stream new to the game. Please, no spoilers. No one reads the title of your Twitch stream, by the way, just FYI.
And they still,
or they just spoilers. Don't care, and they just come in. It's like, oh, you should do, and they just talk about like some like mid or end game technique. You just like, dude, I'm mining iron, and it says that this is my first playthrough. Like, just, I don't know that the game even does that, let alone how to do it. So you're ruining discovery. You're ruining, you know, you're telling me how to do it. It's no longer a puzzle if someone tells you the answer, right?
Yeah.
And so I've got a timer. I've got a which is nice, and it's good for things like promotions. Like, so I'll promote the spawn chunks, and I'll promote my artwork and stuff like that. And they're on like 45-minute timers or half an hour. So like, if you're watching my stream for an hour, you'll still see 2 auto posts to be like, hey, Joel's an artist. You should check out his work. That kind of thing. But what I did was I put an auto post from Nightbot to say, you know, blind Joel is new to the game. Please don't give any hints or spoilers unless he specifically asks for them. Like, he's like, okay, I'm done with this frustrating game mechanic. How the crap do I drive this truck? Or like, you know, like, how do I get past this? Because this isn't a game spoiler. This is a poor game design. I can't figure out where the heck I'm going, you know? And so I've had to put that on a 15-minute timer. Now, I have to remember to go turn that off when I play Minecraft, because I'm not new to Minecraft and I can't have that tick by. So I have to remember to go disable that. It's an easy thing to do. You just have to remember to do it. And so I've had some people in my chat be like, hey, Joel, you might want to turn off your satisfactory reminder. Oh, shoot. Sorry. You know, cause I'm playing Minecraft and I totally know what I'm doing, you know? Mm-hmm. So that kind of stuff has been challenging. But before we get into, I guess, what I've been playing, I do want to mention a little bit here at the top of the show in terms of some Disney Star Wars news. I got an email just this morning, I think, that you can now stream The Last Jedi on Disney Plus. I don't know why you want to, but you can.
But yeah,
that's the okay, sure headline. But the really important headline is that there are new episodes of The Clone Wars coming to Disney Plus February 17th.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is the six seasons of Clone Wars that happened like 10 years ago. And they're all available on Disney Plus now, but there's a 7th and final season coming, which is cool. I didn't know that was happening.
I did hear about this. That's
so
amazing.
So it's going to look like a lot better than the originals, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited because I did quite like The Clone Wars. It's not a easy thing to rewatch because it was aimed at young kids and then it kind of grew with them. So the final seasons are an easier watch than the early seasons. However, I did really like Disney's Star Wars Rebels. I never finished it, and it wasn't that it was bad, it was that I didn't have access. Like, I had to download it, and like, so it was not an easy thing to get a hold of, and so I fell off on that. But that had started to have tie-ins with like episode four and all this kind of stuff, because Star Wars Rebels happens really close to A New Hope in terms of the timeline. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of tie-ins and stuff. And there was tie-ins to, without any spoilers, The Mandalorian and some of the cartoons in the last Mandalorian episode. So I'm going to go back and finish the Star Wars Rebels and then get ready for... I might even watch the last season of Clone Wars just so I can get ready for the February 17th season 7. So I'm looking forward to that, because the Star Wars animation can be really, really fun. It's there are they do tend to have these like one-off episodes that are like really kiddie, which I don't like, kind of like the Voltron Mall episode, that kind of thing. And I remember there was one of those in the first season of Star Wars Rebels, but in the second season they got really heavy with the story and they brought back some characters from Clone Wars even, and so I feel like the rest of Star Wars Rebels is going to be a little bit more adventure focused as opposed to the week to week sort of like
interesting
episodic thing. Yeah. And I was talking to Peyton over the holidays, because there's another one called Star Wars Resistance, which ties into the new movies, The Force Awakens and all that kind of stuff. And apparently it's not great. The Star Wars Resistance animated show is not very good because they tried to do the cel shaded stuff, but apparently they did it very poorly. And Peyton has seen both. He's seen Resistance because his son is into it, and he has seen The Dragon Prince. And he was like, The Dragon Prince is much better. So Star Wars Resistance, apparently not very good. But I would be more interested in the classic canon, Star Wars Rebels, and like going back to the older timeline as opposed to the new. So there's a lot of stuff coming with Disney Plus between now and what most people are now calling the Mandalorian channel. until season two of The Mandalorian comes out, there's a bit that you have to kind of wait for. But I was going to cancel Disney Plus, but now that I know that there's a new set of Clone Wars stuff coming in February, I'm going to hang on to it for at least another month or two.
So my roommate and I got Disney Plus a little while ago. I mean, we think we're going to keep it. Like we got it just to kind of trial run it, but I think she ended up buying a year.
Oh, cool.
Of it. And just with the amount of stuff that's on there, like, I mean, so far we've, you know, made our way through all of the old Disney stuff, but I'm really liking The Mandalorian, and like, I like all the Star Wars content that's on there.
Yeah.
And you know, as bad as they are, I'd like to go back and rewatch a lot of the older ones eventually, I think. And just I'm not talking about the original series. I'm talking about like the prequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, I like to go back and watch them just to remind myself how bad they are. I don't know why. It's like I'm like making myself suffer, I guess. But also, I'm sorry if you can hear like snowplows outside.
Well, I was going to ask. I was like, is that you or is that the plow going by? But yeah. No, it's obviously the plow going by. That has to be, that's barely audible. It just sounds like mic noise. But for you, that must be crazy loud.
Well, I say I have noise canceling headphones on, so the fact that I can hear them through my noise canceling headphones means it's probably very loud and right outside my window. I know
there's a passing rule to not talk about weather, but for those of you that are curious at home, there's about a foot of snow down in Dartmouth, Halifax, that has come down in the last 2 hours. So we're in the Nova Scotia thinks it's winter.
Yeah, it started at 4 this morning, I think.
Oh, has it? Okay.
Yeah. It's been going on for a while. Yeah, it's been going on for a while.
Well, when it snows outside, I do things like stay inside and play video games and watch movies and stuff. And over the holidays, I did happen to go see Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. We are not going to talk about it in detail here because I feel like I need to see it again before I can really dive into and dissect and have some more opinions on it. Also, Pixel Riffs, my co-host on Spunchunks, kind of stuck his foot in the sand and said, hey, when you're talking about Star Wars, I want to come back on the show. So we're going to do that hopefully in the next week or so after everybody has had a chance to see it, because I know Brockett and his wife just went to go see it this week because they were busy over the holidays. But I thought it was worth a mention. No, we didn't miss it. Yes, we went to go see it. Both Megan and I had seen it. I think Alistair saw it. Well, you and Alistair saw it together. And then I will say that I was pretty disappointed, and that's why I want to go see it again. In that I want to know, because I felt very similar after I saw Endgame, and Endgame's not perfect. There are certainly parts of it after rewatching it a couple times now where I find it kind of slow and lax. Mm-hmm. But overall, I thought Endgame really achieved a monumentous thing that it set out to do. And I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, did I not like it, or am I just sad that it's over? Right. And so I'm wondering if I'm having the same sort of feelings about The Rise of Skywalker. Like, am I really that disappointed in it? Or is it, am I just sad? Well, I mean, to quote someone that did a review, it was A.A. Dowd, gave it a C+, writing that the film is so frightened with obligation that it almost groans under the weight. And that would be about where I sit with it right now, is that I don't necessarily know that Rise of Skywalker is set out to do what it achieved, but I can also appreciate the momentous pressure, you know, that the film was under and expectations it was trying to meet. So I need to know whether I need to maybe lower my expectations and see it again or whatever. So those are my quick thoughts on The Rise of Skywalker. Megan, I know that you and Alistair saw it over the holidays. What were your first impressions?
I didn't hate it. Actually, you know what? I didn't mind it. I had a fun time. It definitely, like, at the end of it, I looked at it and said it, and it truly was a Star Wars. and that's taking a joke from a friend of a friend of a friend. Yeah. But I liked it. It felt like a Star Wars movie. It felt cheesy. To me, the stories were always very obvious, like even in the original trilogy. I went back and watched them recently. I'm just like, this is the most obvious thing. Like the plots are very generic.
Well, it's a hero's journey, right? I mean, it's basically mythology in space. Like, I mean, it's meant to follow those kind of canons, which is why it has such a broad appeal, right? Like, it's, there's only, well, I mean, Brockett will always say, like, there's only 7 different stories that you can tell, really, you know, like, at the end of the day. But yeah, I feel like it definitely felt like a Star Wars film, you know, like, in terms of, you know, that kind of stuff. And I mean, and I don't want to say that I didn't not like it.
Yeah.
I feel very differently than I did walking out of The Force Awakens. I enjoyed The Force Awakens. I know it wasn't the most inventive movie in the world, but for whatever reason, it kind of resonated with me. And when it comes to The Rise of Skywalker, it's weird for me to be out of a Star Wars film and not know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's where I'm just like, huh, that's not my normal reaction. You know, like, I usually have a strong reaction. Either that was awesome, or, you know, we're talking about The Last Jedi, and everybody has very strong opinions about that too, right? So I feel like it's, you know, it's one of those things where I'd have to just watch it again and maybe go in with either less expectations or try to turn my brain off or, like, just try to get a little bit more out of it.
I would definitely be down with going to see it again at some point. Mm-hmm.
We should do
if
that.
You wanted to go.
Yeah.
If you wanted to go, because I feel like I do need to watch it again. My first impressions of it were not bad, but not like I had fun. I had fun watching it. I had a good fun time. There's a couple things that I laughed at, but I don't know if I was just laughing at the sake of like, oh, they went that route, huh? Or if it was just like legitimately funny. I couldn't quite tell. I think the one thing that I thought was extremely unnecessary, like just so unnecessary that it was just glaringly obvious that they were just either.
Is it a spoiler? Because we should warn people.
It might be a spoiler. It's at the very end. So maybe.
Okay.
Maybe I won't. But we can talk about it afterwards. But yeah, okay. There was just one moment that was just so unnecessary between two characters that could have been done any other way. That was still would have gotten the same emotion across.
I know precisely what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So I think it didn't need to go that hard with it, but it did. And I was just like, all right. So they pissed off two opposing fan groups in the span of 2 seconds.
2 seconds. Yeah.
Is what happened.
Yeah.
So like it happened and I was just like, ugh, what? I actually made a face and then I like was like, oh, that sucks. It's just sort of like not really sure how to feel about that moment. But I didn't hate it. I had fun. It was a fun movie. It was a fun time. I think I've kind of stepped away from expecting like a lot from movies. So I go into movies with absolutely no expectations. And I find that I enjoy them so much more when I go in with absolutely no expectations. And even if like things about it aren't good, there's usually something about it that is just like, you know what? No, I walked away with a good time. Like I went to go see Cats And I voluntarily went to go see Cats. That is not a good movie.
No, I've heard nothing but like vile reviews about that.
But I had such a good time going to really? See that movie. Okay. Oh yeah, and mostly because like I knew it was bad. I walked so Colin and I, my boyfriend and I, went to go see it, and we knew it was not going to be good. But we just didn't realize how not good it was gonna be. It's like it comes full circle. It's like, you know, this is gonna be bad. As you're starting, you're just like, oh no, what have we done? And then by the end of it, you're just like, well, that was a thing that happened, and you kind of just kind of come around full. It's so bad that it's good.
Yeah.
And you cannot get that back. Oh wow. And it still kind of like permeates my brain every once in a while. Like sometimes I'm just like, huh. That was a thing I voluntarily put myself through. And I've seen so many amazing tweets about it. Like Noelle Stevenson, just every once in a while just keeps tweeting about it. And it's like, she saw this movie a month ago. It's still haunting her. Like every other day she'll just tweet about Cats. And it's like, this movie is still very clearly affecting you. Mm. And someone else was just like, I had a nightmare that like humans grew hair on the backs of their knees, like under their arms. And I can't help but blame the Cats movie for this. And it was just like, there's just so many weird things that have been happening since this movie came out. But it's like, nothing bad. It's just, everyone is just kind of like, what? This is a real thing that happened. I don't know. Why did this happen? Mm. Did we all just have a weird fever dream? But it was especially weird because now I feel really terrible for the animators who've had to do this movie, because clearly there was a deadline and they never managed to finish it. And 2 weeks before Christmas, there was like a mad rush to try and get like the finalized, quote unquote, finalized version of this movie. They put an unfinished version in the theaters. So you just have this constant time of people. Clearly, I have a lot to say about Cats. I'm really sorry about this. They had an unfinished version in the theaters where you could see the fur on the backs of people's hands like clipping. Like it would just like move randomly in weird places, or like their hand would move and then the fur would follow, or you would see like no fur animated on their hands at all. You could just see the line of their mocap suit instead. Mm. Like for the sleeve of it. And then a lot of the time I feel like I can't look at Judi Dench anymore, which sucks because she's one of my favorite actors, but she just looked like the Cowardly Lion throughout the entire movie, and that's all I could see for most of the movie. Yeah. And it's like you just see her face, but her skin tone matched the fur color they chose for her cat, so it just it's really unnerving. And then I think the one, like, you know, they all
it
just
kind of makes
like,
you wonder how they managed to convince Dame Judi Dench to be in Cats.
Well, there's a huge cast in there. Like Rebel Wilson and James Corden is in there.
And
Ian McKellen, Idris Elba.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's like a lot of very well-known people in this movie. And I want to know who had blackmail on them, or if they just thought like if like someone was like, hey, you should do this movie with me, it's going to be fun. And then no one really how bad it was gonna be. Mm-hmm. but the one who made me the most uncomfortable, like Taylor Swift is in it. She's also not even very good in it. She's not an actor. But she wasn't really acting, she was just singing. So I don't know if you're familiar with Cats at all, but there's a song about a cat named McCavity, and that song is one of like the best songs in the whole show, if I'm being honest. And so she was singing that one, so I'm like, okay, fair, you know, fair choice for that. But there's a line in the song, it always says McCavity's not there, but it's set somewhere in England. So Taylor Swift was trying to do this terrible sing-songy British accent at the end of every single line, and it was just really not good. Mm-hmm. And then they all very much looked like people in cat suits. But for whatever reason, Idris Elba was uncomfortable because he was the one who looked the most naked.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the majority of the time when you're seeing him, he's wearing like a kind of ratty looking fedora and like a big puffy coat that's meant to simulate like a lot of like fluffy fur. And then he has like the weird cat face and everything. But then for whatever reason, during his like dance number, because, you know, the cats are like doing a dance presentation so that Judi Dench's character like basically chooses them to go die so they can be reborn somewhere. It's really morbid. This is the 80s. It was a weird time. But he's shed his big fluffy coat and the hat. So, and the fur color they chose for him was black, and he himself is black, so he just looked the most naked out of everybody, because you can see like the pecs and the abs still.
Right.
It was a very strange movie. Again, clearly I have a lot of thoughts about this, and apparently it's still haunting me because I'm still thinking about it. I saw it a month ago.
It's widely reviewed as terrible, but from a director of films like Les Mis, the King's Speech, you know, like The Danish Girl, these are critically acclaimed films.
Blackmail, I'm telling you, blackmail. Someone had blackmail on all these people. Clearly, this was an example of producers not quite knowing how this was going to land. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is like akin to Sonic thing, where producers were like, no, this is how the look has to be, and then they had to go and reanimate everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there is a moment, or not a moment, there was a thing going on where they were going to re-release the movie with updated graphics, because there's just a lot of moments of people looking like they're floating. No one has a lot of weight. Clearly the whole thing was like, their use of CG was not good CG, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, yep. Good CG, then there's just like, everyone's shortcuts. Floating, all right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I kind of feel bad for the animators who had to hang around and fix the problem so close to the holidays, because you know damn well they're getting paid a pittance for that. But Colin was like, we have to go see this before they fix it, because I feel like that's the only way you can experience it. And it's true, like, Judi Dench is just wearing her wedding ring in most of the movie. Sometimes, not all the movie, but in most of the movie she's wearing it. And there are certain scenes they just forgot to animate the hands and CGI out the rings and stuff for most of it. It's an experience. I'm saying that everyone should go see it, mostly not because it's good, but because it's an experience. In like, it's almost like a social experiment, how bad and how crazy Hollywood is, and it's just like, let's just see how quickly we can make money with something as super super terrible. It's torrent it, but also don't, because those animators need money.
Yeah.
I have a lot of mixed feelings, clearly, but it was a thing.
The problem that comes up on the show all the time when Hollywood makes crap is that people still go see it, and so then it just becomes a financially successful business venture, so then Hollywood continues to make crap, and then everybody complains about the crap, but then people go see the crap. And it's like, no. So yeah, I will safely say that I will never be watching this movie. I'm not even a really big fan of musicals anyway, so it's not.
Oh yeah, no, you would hate it. No. Like the whole time, because we were like, Colin and I were the only ones in the theater. Right? There was like, it was a family movie. It was rated G, but it was also just weirdly sexual.
Oh yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah,
it was really weird.
When I saw the few seconds of a trailer before I skipped the ad, it just reminded me of like those furry documentary things that you see when people are going to like conventions and in big fursuits. I was like, yeah, no, not for me.
I mean, cats in and of itself is super weird anyway. So a part of me is like, you know what? I'm glad they kept it weird. But like,
yeah.
That was just something else. And like the weirdest part about it, and like Bethley was just like, really, that's the weirdest part about it. But the thing that made it look really strange is that they decided not to animate, or that not to put like cat noses on them. It's just human faces weird. Slapped on cat bodies. That's all. That's what it is. It's literally what it is. So it's like weird, like correct ears, like the ears move like normal cat ears, but their faces aren't quite shaped the right way. Like it's like human heads with cat ears on top and no hair, and like it's so bizarre.
So just to kind of like take this in the direction where it maybe should have gone. Can you imagine if this was just a CG cartoon? Like just Pixar it
and yes.
Out the wazoo. Have all the same voice actors and the same singers, like Jennifer Hudson and like, you know, Taylor Swift for the singing voice of that cat, and then get someone that can actually act to the speaking voice. But like, how much better would it be if it was just straight up animation? I have not seen them, so I can't judge them. But things like The Lion King and Aladdin, and there's a mermaid one coming out in the next couple of years. Like I don't understand the draw of turning these animated classics into CG, like live action type stuff. It looks so off to me.
So Cats itself started as a Broadway musical.
Yes, I knew that.
It's yeah. But the costumes for the Broadway musical, there's like a weird different like suspension of disbelief in like on stage especially. So you know that these are humans dancing. There it's a very like physically demanding show. Like it's amazing athletes that do that show. Dancers and acrobats and all the like. When they actually paint on the cat faces, they paint on cat noses.
Yeah.
And like they adjust the eyes so the eyes have like a larger like cat-like appearance. So like even from an audience looking at someone on the stage, it looks, I mean, it doesn't look like a cat, but it looks like a cat. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's a person in a cat costume. Like it,
exactly.
Or in cat makeup for stage. Like, I mean, I've seen it. I've not seen the play, but I grew up in the 80s. I've seen pop culture videos.
And, yeah.
Like I've seen, you know, images and stuff like that. I know what it looks like. And that looks better than what I've seen from this film trailer.
Yeah. Like I don't know. This is not going to fix the whole problem, but if their makeup consisted of also maybe animating a cat like nose onto the face and adjust like not, they just basically put the human face on the cat body, and that I think like that's not the only thing that's wrong with it. I don't want to reiterate that, like, but also I feel like animating a on a human face would make like Avatar, like at least Avatar, you could tell it was still like a person. You could tell who the person was, but it didn't.
Oh,
it
also
seemed slightly more believable. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, James Cameron's Avatar, just to be
clear. Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Cause I watched that recently, and the character's name is Jake Sully, but I don't remember the actor's name, but the model of his Navi character has the same cheekbone structure, and the way that they kind of even explained it in the film is that it's genetically grown to suit his DNA makeup, right? So or his brother's, and that's why it'll suit him. And so
because they're identical twins.
Yeah. So that when he's in it, it's good for you as an audience person too, because then you get to see the actor's expressions, and I'll stand by the fact that Zoe Saldana does a phenomenal job in that film.
She's so good.
Like,
she's
the Navi character of her doesn't so much look like her. But
it does though at the same time.
I mean, it does because it moves like her, but I find that because the female Navi have such big eyes, I feel like
it's more so in like the mouth expressions.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, but I just find that the female Navi characters have like a triangle head, whereas at least the males, they have more of a human-shaped skull. Like they have jaws, and so I find, because Sute, I think is the other guy's name.
Sute.
He looks like the actor as well. And I even knew who it was before I saw the behind the scenes, just because of how much he looked like the actor. And whereas with the female characters, like, I had a hard time sometimes figuring out what, you know, what character. Although I guess they made the Sigourney Weaver character look like her too. I guess the thing is there is that in those situations you see the human before you see the Navi version, whereas with the Navi natives, of course, you don't. There is no human version, so you don't see the actor in the film before you see the actual avatar. Anyway, an excellent example from years ago. Of that being very well done, right? Anyway, we should probably move on. Go see Cats at Your Own Risk, I guess.
Or don't. Totally fine, too. I took one for the team and went to go see it for everyone. So
yeah, there you go. Now you don't have to. But we should probably move into... We'll talk about The Witcher. I think that's probably the next thing.
Yeah.
You and I have seen the whole thing. We should mention that we're going to get into spoilers because there's no really way to talk about this over the top, you know, story arc without spoiling something, because the whole thing is told out of order, which I'll get into. But so this is Henry Cavill starring as Geralt in The Witcher on Netflix. There's 8 episodes, I think, in total. 8 or 10.
Yes.
So I was able to watch it over the holidays. I was in the mood for some fantasy stuff. And I will say that I was also really disappointed with this. It has high production value. Like, it was not hard to watch in terms of like, it's not bad. Like, you don't watch 5 minutes of it and go, oh gosh, am I going to like this? For the first episode or two, like, you're really kind of sucked in and you're learning about the continent and this world and all this kind of stuff. But overall, terrible storytelling, like impossible to follow. I had to Google whether or not Netflix had put the episodes up in the wrong order by episode 4. If that's something that I have to do mid-season, you've done something wrong. Like, I'm a pretty savvy person.
And... see, I liked that. I liked how it was out of order. Because, so I watch everything with subtitles. Do you mind if I cut you off? Do you have more to say?
No, go ahead.
I watch everything with subtitles. So it's one of those shows you absolutely have to pay attention to. And I think it's worth it to watch it with subtitles. And I watch everything with subtitles because I inevitably miss something. But I'm glad I had the subtitles on for this one. I just do it with everything. Just I need to focus. In one episode, I can't remember which number of episode. I think it was the third one. It's the one with the Striga.
Oh, yeah. Third or fourth, something like that.
Yeah. I'll get to the fourth episode in a second, but the one with the Striga, where, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in that episode. There's the whole Striga thing. You hear about Foltest, the king, his whole weird relationship with his sister, mm-hmm. which is in itself is bizarre. But then that's when Yennefer is also having her initiation, where she's like, you know, the whole transformation with Yennefer. Foltest is also there at the time of Yennefer's initiation, but he's a kid and his sister's alive. So I figured out right away that something was different. And I'm like, oh, they're bouncing around time zones, which I thought was super, super clever, because it's like, it's you're seeing little snippets of everyone's life at different points in time. And then by the end of the series, it's all converging into one timeline. And I like it was confusing at first, but then when it came to the end, like you see that moment where Ciri looks to like the archway that you see in the first episode, I was like, oh, it's all come full. And I thought that was really, really cool.
See, the problem that I had,
I get why people wouldn't like it.
Well, Netflix gives you zero indication. Like there's no, yes. They don't even pop up a location. Like when you're hovering over a city, they don't give you a like kingdom of whatever, like on screen. They don't tell you when. They don't tell you, and I don't need like, you know, made up dates, but you could even just like, for example, I'll tie something to World of Warcraft. The Chronicle books that I'm reading for World of Warcraft, they tie everything to the Dark Portal. So the Dark Portal is a huge event in that world. And they say, 2,000 years before the Dark Portal, 500 years after the Dark Portal. It's like BC and AD in our current, you know, time, you know, the way that humans track time. So like that to me at least gives me a point of reference. They don't even give you that. So, and there's a couple of big events that seem to happen. There's a huge battle that happens in the first couple of episodes and a lot of people die and it's bad. And yet they never tell you when that happens. The other thing that I find so terrible about the way that they jump back and forth is that I can handle it if different episodes happen in different orders. And again, if you gave me some sort of indication.
Yeah.
But they switch timelines from scene cut to scene cut with no explanation whatsoever. And so in one episode, you're watching this thing happen and people die. And in the next episode, or perhaps later that episode, you're watching the same thing, but then it's the same character, very much alive. And apparently years, it is years, like a lifetime, a human lifetime is passed in the difference in time. And they're in the same bloody costume. Like there's not even something to indicate to me, oh, this person is younger. They no longer have a beard or they're in a different cut. Like, nope, this is the same thing that they just died in 15 minutes ago, 20 years in the future. And to me, it was just broken. And I can appreciate that they tried to take the original stories. I mean, all of these are based on a series of novels from,
the I think Polish it's a author.
Polish author. I don't know. Sepakowski, I think. That's how you pronounce it. And they're really well renowned. And the difference is that the books are separate. So when you're following Geralt's story, that's one thing. And then when you follow Yennefer's story, that's something else. And then when you're following Ciri's story, that's something else again. And the showrunner decided to combine them all into this one series, so that essentially you're not getting huge swaths of episodes with no Henry Cavill, would be my guess. Because otherwise he's going to be in it for one episode and then not in it for two, you know, and then in it again. And so you have to kind of chop things up this way, because each of these stories is told over a vast amount of time. And I just don't think it works in the way that Netflix ordered it.
The important thing to notice about, I totally respect that. Like, I feel like I have a bit of an advantage because I know a little bit about the lore of the world already. I definitely think that for people who don't have as much information about the lore of the world, a lot of things can definitely get lost.
Which should be the mission of the show, right? Yeah, like, you should be treating it like this is your first time, which is what I am. I've heard of the video games, but I've never played them.
Yeah. Now my mom's watching it. She hasn't finished it yet, and I want to get her opinion on it later, because she's never heard anything about The Witcher before. Like, I've not told her anything. This is her first time watching it. Important distinction to make is, Geralt is the main storyline you should be following, so his is in complete chronological order. Actually, all of their stories are really in chronological. Yeah, his stories. When you watch his story from the first episode that you see him up to when he meets Ciri, everything that happens with him is in chronological order. His like, every scene with him is his own chronological order. Every scene with Yennefer is her own chronological order. Every scene with Ciri is in her own chronological order. But where they put the scenes is not in chronological order. So if you watch it again from just Geralt scenes, everything from episode 1 to episode 8, everything that happens with Geralt is completely chronological. And same with all the characters. They all have their own respective chronological stories, but the way they're being told is not chronological.
No, because they go back in time with Geralt. He talks to the king and the queen about the law of surprise. And that's not the first episode. That's like the fourth or fifth or something. And that's back in time.
Is it back in time? Oh, yep. I thought everything was chronological. Oh, nope, that's how.
Because Ciri's not even born at that point. Because Ciri's the surprise.
But when you see him in the first episode, though, that's even before he's gone back for he hasn't had that surprise yet. When you see him, that Butcher of Blaviken scene, that is like 5 years prior to when he goes back to talk to them. Like, in the whole thing in Blaviken where he has that fight with Renry, like the very first episode where you first see him, that's 5 years prior before he even goes to talk to the king and queen about the law of surprise. That's like prior. That's right. Prior to everything.
So, but, and this is what I'm trying to say, is that the show is so bad at communicating that.
Right.
So if that's in chronological order, then why are we getting other bits of stuff out of, like, it just, and not to mention that you there are scenes where you've got, if you're following Yennefer in chronological order, the problem is that there are interactions between Yennefer and Geralt. I can't remember how to pronounce his name.
Geralt.
Where he's interacting with Yennefer, and it's unclear if it's a Yennefer scene or if it's a Geralt scene. Right. And so, cause then you're like, well, is this happening for him out of order or for her out of order? Like I said, it's an epic fail on trying to communicate clearly stories, which is too bad because everything else about the show has legs, right? I mean, they did a good job of presenting a really unique world. They don't beat you over the head with exposition, except for the minstrel. Like, when you're into there, you're curious about the continent. How do witches work? How does magic work in this universe? Oh, there's elves. Are they good elves? Are they bad elves? Like, what's the deal? And so they set all that kind of stuff up in a really high production value. And I want to try to balance the conversation, so I'm not always ranting about it. But I mean, like, it's not a hard show to watch. It's just a hard show to follow. It did get easier once I Googled, hey, did Netflix put these things out of order? And they go, oh no, the whole thing is told out of a wonky timeline. So then for the rest of the season, you're watching it with that in your mind. So I'm curious if anybody listening has not watched it, but goes into it knowing, oh, it's told out of sequence. I should be paying attention to this being told out of sequence because no one else is going to tell me other than, you know, this podcast or, you know, the internet. And I think that's the thing. Like, I mean, if you're going to be putting out stories, the stories have to stand on their own. don't anticipate your viewers to have their phone and Google at the ready to, you know, sort out where you've made things confusing. But on the positive note, I mean, it's the costumes, the sets, the filming. Granted, it's pretty drab, like it's all gray, but it's at least consistent, right? Like there's not a lot of places where I go, oh, that was wonky computer animation, or I don't feel like I'm really in this tavern. I feel like I'm on a set somewhere. All of it felt pretty authentic. Like I did not feel, even in the outside scenes, I didn't look up to see where they shot it, but it all felt very unworldly. Like it did not feel like anywhere is on this planet. Like it always felt very fantastic and out there. Like you mentioned earlier, what was the name of that monster? It was
the Striga.
Striga. So all of the monsters are interesting, unique. It's not Dracula and werewolves, you know. And there's even a funny comment about someone talking about a werewolf, and then I think Geralt says like, "Yeah, they don't exist," don't work that way, or something like that. Like this. So all of the kind of classic tropes that you hear in monster movies, like Van Helsing, you know, are quickly squashed. Be like, no, not happening here. But in a way that is appropriate for the world, right? I know that you really like, you know, magic and stuff like that in media. I thought it was really interesting that magic had a cost.
Yes.
And you had to learn how to control that cost. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really good too. Really good performances. I thought,
I thought the acting was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Anya, Chalotra, I think that's how you pronounce her name, who plays Yennefer, was fantastic.
A lot of people are complaining that she was miscast, and part of me is wondering if it's because she's a woman of color, because Yennefer in the games is typically known for being like very, very like lily white.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is a Polish, like Norwegians. I imagine most characters are probably pretty, pretty white, you know, which is fine. It just, I don't mind the casting. I think it's fine.
Yeah. I think, but like what I loved about the casting in this is that like, you know, Triss is the only one who looks so unlike her character in the games.
Who's Triss, remind me?
Triss is, so she's the woman who's the mage to King Foltis, who like helps Geralt with the Striga. She's the one who she's got like, she was wearing a blue dress, I think, in the beginning. She's the one at the very end who like gets burned. She makes like the wall of vines and things.
Oh, right. Yes.
So Triss is, she's the first one. But the only one really that's super, super different from how her character looks in the game. Right. The character in the game is, you know, a redhead.
Oh, well, there's another like redhead, really, which like they're, yeah.
Yeah, that's, yeah, Sabrina. Right. So Sabrina looks more so as like Triss looks in the video games, but I like how Triss looks in this. Like I love that the casting didn't really play a part in, or like race didn't play a part in terms of cast.
No, I mean, and for someone that's outside of the games, like had never seen any of that kind of stuff. I mean, like Cavill, they made him look like Geralt. I mean, he looks great. Mm-hmm. But I like the witches in this are all so multicultural and exotic that it would have been weird if they were all Caucasian. You know what I mean? Like it just, everything about that culture on the continent feels like witches are just pulled and trained from anywhere. It doesn't matter like where you grew up or where you're from. If you've got this ability, then you could potentially just be, you know, a witch. I don't remember the name of the bad witch, the one that helps the elves. Or not elves. Not the elves. It's a kingdom that sounds like elves.
Nilfgaard.
Nilfgaard. I can't remember her name.
Fringilla.
Yeah, but she, I mean, the actress that they got to play her is phenomenal, and she's
beautiful
and black as night. Like, I mean, stunning. Just really dark complexion, you know. And
there was a shot of her, like it was like really
powerful,
dark, and her face was just illuminated in the most amazing way. And oh, I was just like, you are so gorgeous.
I mean, some of the cinematography is fantastic too. I mean, like I said, it's not hard to watch, like in terms of.
It visually looks amazing.
Yeah.
Looks incredible.
Never do you say like, oh, that's a cool CG effect. You're like, oh, she can shoot fire. You know, like
there's really only one, like I think in total, the only episode that I was really like questioning the validity of the show was episode 4. It had real like community theater vibes to it. Cause that's when like, you know,
which one was 4?
that was when you were first introduced to the whole live surprise thing, when Dooney comes and he's like, oh no, I'm owed Pavetta because of the law of surprise, and he has like the hedgehog face, and it's also the same episode where Yennefer is trying to escape from the assassin who's trying to kill the queen with the baby. Whole thing, like that whole episode, like anything with
that
Yennefer,
reminded me of WBTV. Like that reminded me of like a Flash episode, or like it was hokey. You're right. It did lose. And I think it was one of those episodes where it was all very bright too. Like everything was in like a throne room. And so nothing was really grim and gritty. It was all very like, why is everybody clean?
Everyone was very, very bright.
Yeah.
My favorite line though, just when Geralt's just like, yeah, law of surprise. And then Pavetta winds up pregnant. And then his response is just, fuck.
Yeah.
I loved his delivery as Geralt with everything. I like how his dialogue was pretty much like or fuck extensively. That was his entire dialogue, and it's great because you know it's not Cavill.
Yeah,
but
the issue
it's
that
Geralt,
I had,
and it's just I don't know. I liked it a lot. I thought it was fantastic.
This is where some of the dialogue actually breaks down for me, in that especially later on in the series. Because early on, most of what people are saying is world building. Like if they're opening their mouth, they're giving you some sort of bit of information, which is, maybe could be paced out a little bit, because you get inundated with so much stuff in the first few episodes. It's really kind of hard to keep track, especially with no visual, like, you know, Nilfgaard. You know, like, you don't know where you are or who you're looking at, right? But with the dialogue, I find that it gets very stilted later on, where... I mean, Cavill as Geralt has a great physical presence, you know, broody and like grumpy and all that kind of stuff. But then when he speaks, you're like, I kind of want him to say more than just like, no, Yennefer, no. You know, he says the obvious, and it's not just
and
him.
And that's honestly just Geralt. That's just the character. The character is a man of very few words and articulating himself.
But that's what I mean. Like, but I'm not playing a video game, right? I don't have the adventure previous to.
No, but I also mean like that's also book Geralt as well. Like I've read the books too.
Right.
That's just Geralt.
But again, in a book, you've got an inner monologue, right?
Yeah.
Describing his observations about what's going on. In a Netflix series, I need more than him saying like, no, no. It's like, but why? Because you've told the story so disjointed. I don't know to which previous experience with Yennefer you're experiencing, because apparently now you call her Yen, like a nickname, and you've known each other for like 40 years, but I've got no context. And so it just doesn't make any, like it's not a payoff. Like you finally get an actor who I really like on screen saying something, and he just says empty words. It's like, again, it reminded me of WB stuff where they're talking about they have to stop the villain like four times an episode. It's like, yes, guys, we get it. You're superheroes. Like, move on. And I feel like with this, a lot of the dialogue later on fell to that problem. And I'll take this opportunity to say that anything that Jaskier says could be removed. You could remove the character as a whole.
Oh, see, I love Jaskier
so much. Every time he opens his mouth, it's modern, annoying, poorly written humor, mildly draped in pop culture in a period show. Even his singing sounds modern. And to me, it ripped me out of the continent and put me on my couch watching a television show. And I was like, oh, wow. And I thought hopefully he was in it for one episode, but nope, he's in the whole fucking series. And like, I was so done with it. I was almost relieved when I was finished the series, because I cannot stand him. The next time that you watch Love Actually, this guy is the Colin God of sex from Love Actually. You will never unsee that. And
I think that's why I liked him so much. No. And I think like he had one of my favorite. The spluttering and then yelling at Geralt, you need a nap. And that, I think that was like probably one of the best moments of the show for me.
See, that to me just rips me out of it, because nowhere is in the anything in the show do they ever mention anything about naps. Like, naps are modern things. Like everything.
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're a modern thing.
But how he refers to it is how we refer to it. Like, you and I would say, I need a nap, to say I'm frustrated with the world, I'm tired, or whatever. Like, that kind of vernacular is a kind of a modern pop culture thing. Whereas in this, they don't mention anything. They don't, it never comes up. Like, it's just everything that he says is completely written for modern audiences, and everything else in the show, I mean, with the exception of, I also didn't like the F-bombs. I didn't like it when Geralt says fuck, because that to me is a modern swear word. And then everything else that they're doing.
Oh, no, it is not. Okay, it is, well, I know it seems but it's not.
But he's the only one that says it in the show, and no one else. They're all faced with death and fear and dismemberment, and no one says fuck. Like, it's just him.
And, oh, you know, Yennefer does a whole bunch too.
Okay, well, I didn't. Oh, yeah. I don't she curses
a whole lot.
But like all of the other people, it's not just, I don't know. Even in Game of Thrones, I didn't drop it that much. Like, it just, it's, for me, the show tries to be something it's not in a lot of its dialogue, and it really fell flat with me. It just, for me, it just was not there. I wish there was more sword fighting, because when that happened, it was bloody amazing. Tell the work that went into it. You know that it's Cavill doing all the stunt work. I mean, I've seen some behind the scenes videos and interviews of him on Instagram talking about it and stuff like that. I now know why so many of those interviews are focused on the stunts, because I think they might have known it wasn't going to land quite as well as they'd hoped. But when he was doing that kind of stuff on screen, it was phenomenal. It was not this like endless duel. It was like clang, clang, you're dead, you know, like, and then it was on to the next guy, and it was brutal, and it felt heavy. And he gets stabbed in a leg, you know, when he limps, like, it just, there's, you know, and 'cause he think he drinks like elixirs or something like that to like keep him going. And like, so he's got this like magical knowledge, magical abilities to a limit. And then also, can't remember the name of what it is. What would be like? What's knowledge of potions? Be like, not mixology, but it would be like, I can't. There's a special name for it, and they talk about it in the show. But
apothecary,
apothecary. Yeah. So stuff like that. So all that kind of stuff is really cool, but it doesn't happen very much. Like, a lot of the time, he's just either riding a horse, rolling his eyes at the minstrel dude, or standing in the corner being grumpy. So I wanted a little bit more of that for a show that talk so much about how important the action scenes were. And there was what, 3 major fights with him? There wasn't a lot happening over the course of their shows. But I also really liked Freya Allen as Ciri. I thought she was really good. And there was a lot from her I found, especially because she's a young actress. She's only like 18. And she would have been even younger when they were making this. There was a lot of acting from her without saying much, because she had to not say anything because she was worried about giving herself away as the princess of, I don't remember the name of the kingdom. And so for her, there's just a lot of like emotion through just facial expressions and pauses and like beats. And I found that she was really engaging. And you might be able to answer this question for me, because I found this really confusing. The end of the final episode, where they build up this whole series to the reunion, or I guess first meeting of Geralt and Ciri, and it's epic. I don't understand why. Like, I don't get why it's so important.
So the whole thing, like, so again, I would suggest going back and watching it, because I mean, I just like to rewatch things anyway. So Pavetta and Dooney, do you want any of this? Like this might spoil a lot.
I'm probably not going to watch the second season, and I'm not rewatching this one. If you can't communicate what you need to communicate to me in the first watching, then it's not.
So Pavetta, Calanthe, the queen of Syntra, is Ciri's grandmother.
I know that
her daughter Pavetta and the hedgehog guy who's cursed,
yep,
those are her parents. That's Pavetta and Dooney.
Yeah.
Dooney is actually the rightful heir of Nilfgaard. That's why Nilfgaard is constantly chasing Ciri, because she's actually the rightful heir to Nilfgaard as well as Syntra.
So who's Dooney? Who is the rightful heir to Nilfgaard?
Ciri.
No, before that.
Yes. Oh, Dooney.
Who is her
father?
The hedgehog guy.
Yes.
Okay. So
so you know, at the end of the fourth episode where Geralt calls for the Law of Surprise. So the Law of Surprise is meant to be, give me what you have.
Yes, yeah. I understand all that. I understand that Ciri is the Law of Surprise. Like, I get that.
Yes. So Pavetta was already pregnant with Dooney's child before, because they had already been seeing each other in secret.
Yeah.
And then when he came to, like, claim her from the Law of Surprise, with, like, you know, Dooney was promised Pavetta in the form of Law of Surprise, and then Geralt was kind of just like, yeah, Law of Surprise it, whatever. Pavetta was already pregnant, and she didn't know until she had that whole throw-up moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when Calanthe was like, are you pregnant? And then Geralt was like, oh, fuck, now I have a child of surprise. Great. So Dooney was kind of keeping his identity a secret, but he is the rightful heir of Nilfgaard.
So did you find that out from the show, or do you know that from previous?
I know that from books.
Right. So that right there should be something front and center in the show.
No, but that's something that's going to be revealed later.
Oh.
So it's like the plot point is kind of going in that direction, and that is something that is in the games as well.
Hmm.
So people who played the games, if you know anything about The Witcher, it's mostly from the games. A lot of the lore of the games is also derived from the books, but the first couple of books, like the Witcher games are based after the books. So it's taking a lot of the lore and a lot of the history from the books. And so some of it's talked about in the games, but it's kind of like its own plot point.
Mm-hmm.
The show itself is following the books to the letter in terms of lore and progression.
Yeah.
So
just not in the right order.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and even then the books are, you know, it's kind of told in like snippets of Geralt's life. So anything that's happening with Yennefer and Ciri, one of the challenges that the writers had to make, which I read up on, she had to try and write in a lot of the history of, or like, you know, the perspectives of Yennefer and Ciri, because the books are basically Geralt's journal, more or less. So, and he doesn't remember everything chronologically either. So the books are also a little bit out of order, from my recollection anyway. It's been a while since I've read them. But that is a plot point that's coming out later. Ciri is, because it's a Law of Surprise, like in the first episode, she was told, find Geralt of Rivia. In the first episode, Geralt was told by Renfri, the child in the woods is your destiny. Both of them are each other's destiny. So they're meeting each other with them, like finally finding each other. Like Ciri, like her whole mission has been to find Geralt. That's been her whole mission.
Yeah. No,
Geralt has kind of had this like growing journey, but their whole meeting of each other was like, okay, you finally found each other.
But again, they've never met. It's a child of surprise he didn't want. And so I don't understand why it's portrayed as this big emotional moment, because it's important to each of them.
When it's a magic thing, I'm assuming. That's not what I took it as. Yeah. I took it as like Ciri knew that like he was her only chance of survival. Because like her whole kingdom died. So when she was given a mission of find this person, he'll protect you, he's your destiny, she's like, all right, that's my goal. When Syntra fell and Geralt realized it was falling, and he was there to collect Ciri anyway, because he knew that there was some war, like there's a lot of wars going on. Mm-hmm. He was like, okay, the whole point of the Law of Surprise is if two people are kept apart, like on purpose, that's kind of when calamity happens. So it's like destiny is kind of just like, all right, we're going to fuck up everything until things are right again. That's kind of how it works in this universe, is like, if things are not followed, if destiny is not followed, shit goes south, essentially. Right. So after the war in Syntra, when Calanthe's dead and Ciri was kind of half kidnapped and then was on the run in the last couple of episodes, that's when Geralt was like, okay, I'm actively, because he knew that the war was coming, so he went to go claim her. And then when Calanthe was passing off as someone else's daughter as Ciri, that's when the war started breaking out, because Destiny was like, no, you're going against the design, we're gonna penalize you for it. That's why that happened. So by the end of it, it was Geralt realizing, okay, I need to actually, because he didn't want Ciri, but he was like, things are gonna go south if I don't take her in. And then by that point, it was sort of like a resolution of just like, okay, now like they're all that each other has.
I guess, and then the way that they emotionally portrayed on screen, it looks like a father finding the long lost daughter is how it's emotionally kind of communicated, but they've never met before.
And
she doesn't even know what he looks like. Like, you know what I mean?
No, like, but it's like the magical link connection of the law of surprise. Right.
And
like they're always meant to each other.
Right. And I guess my point is that the show needs to do a better job of communicating that kind of magical link between Ciri and it. Cause then the first thing she says to him is like, who's Yennefer?
I was
like,
Yennefer. So Ciri, I don't know if you noticed in the forest when she was having all those dreams, and everything was red.
Vaguely.
So that was like, it was in one of the middle episodes, five or six. She was having all these dreams where she was seeing a lot of visions, and she was seeing girls in her dreams, and she was seeing, you know, wars and everything that were happening. There's also been a couple moments where whenever Ciri screams, it's like it's a loud resonant sound.
Yeah, no, she blows people. Yeah, she does like a banshee thing. And because, well, she's supposed to be one of these pure blood witch born on the full moon or born on the eclipse or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So she has a lot of, magic doesn't affect her, but she is magical in turn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is going to happen in the show, but in the game, she's a witcher.
Like
she becomes a witcher.
Right. So that, well, that would make sense. It's and again, all of this kind of stuff is the kind of thing that they need to add in with like a prologue. If they had told some of these things in a better order, I would imagine my confusion of the way that they jump around, I probably couldn't tell whether the dream was a flashback or a dream. You know what I mean? Like, is this time? Is this happening out of sequence? Is this real? Is this not real? And I think that in order to, if they want to bring in viewers, then they need to communicate all this stuff a lot clearer, because the fact that you're catching on to all this because you have all the previous knowledge of reading the books and experiencing stuff in the video games is awesome. And it's great fan service for people that love this world, but I feel like if you're going to be introducing a series to people, you can't just say, oh, well, I hope you've read the books and play the video games. Otherwise you're going to be lost. And
yeah. So like, I definitely feel like it is a little bit, non-accessible for people who don't have the previous. But I did suggest someone at work watch it, and I didn't mention that it bounced around in a timeline. I was like, you should watch The Witcher. I'd like to know your thoughts. He watched The Witcher in 2 days, and he said, at first I was really confused. I get why people, I was reading on reviews afterwards, and he's like, I get why people were confused later. But he's the type to watch everything in its entirety, and he was like, ah, he got it. He was like, so I figured out what was going on. Everything that happened was interesting enough for him to keep it going. So he was like, all right, I'm just going to keep watching, because clearly something is going to be explained eventually. And it was. So his whole, it was like a delayed gratification payoff in terms of information, which he likes in terms of storytelling. I like that in terms of storytelling. Do I think it was executed in the best way? Not exactly. I liked it. I thought it was a clever way of executing it. But, you know, for people who, if you don't know it's bouncing around from the beginning, and it did take me a second to figure out, it can start off very, very confusing. But I think that they've done, like, in you know, just to counter your point of like people being in the same costumes, I know that one of the things that really confused me in like Game of Thrones, for example, was when people look the same, like a lot of like side characters who look the same, who all wore the same thing.
Oh yeah.
I found them very confusing to get straight in my head. What I liked about this is that everyone had a very, very clear design of what their character looked like. So even a character who you just watch getting killed, but then you see him later in the past and he's wearing the same thing. I think it's a way to keep your brain straight with who is who. If he had been wearing something else or looked different, I wouldn't have known who he was.
Well,
I mean, probably would have even been more confused.
Yeah, well, the queen's husband there. And I still don't know whether he was a husband, whether he was
he's her second husband.
Yeah, the relationship is really strange. But he's a very distinct looking dude. Like, you can kind of pick him out of a crowd.
I was talking about Mousak personally.
Oh, but yeah, for me, it was him. It was like, because that's when I Googled things. It's like, I just watch him get an arrow through the head and then in the next episode, I'm watching him have dinner. I'm just like, and he's in the exact same outfit. And it's just like, what? Like, I don't, I mean, he's in armor on the battlefield, but underneath it, like the previous to seeing him, he was in the exact same shirt. And I was just like, when did this happen? And that's when I was like, oh, and that I got concerned and thought that the episodes were out of order. I thought, oh crap, am I watching like episode, did I watch episode 3 before I watched episode 4 sort of thing, you know? Because that Netflix has done that before. I don't remember what series it was, but at some point.
I think it was, I know we talked about it before. I think it was Love, Death, and Robots and how things were
not in the
same order for everybody.
No, I'm talking about like a chronological television series. Like there was a mistake. They actually published episodes out of order. It was early on in Netflix. I don't think you were doing the show with me. But anyway, like that kind of stuff really kind of pulled me. Like it really kind of confused me in the way that they, I can appreciate like for character consistency, but like something to indicate that you're changing places or times would have been helpful and easy, you know, like flying over Nilfgaard and it just says Nilfgaard on the screen, you know, like it's, I understand that they don't do that in Lord of the Rings, but you know what, Lord of the Rings, you kind of always know where you are, you know? that kind of stuff. And, but I can commiserate with the Game of Thrones stuff because listening to the audiobooks of Game of Thrones where you don't even have a visual, and names are like so similar.
But the thing with Game of Thrones is that everyone is color coded. So this one character is always in one.
Yeah. 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 But like there's a couple characters. It was Yara and, I don't remember.
Dasha was her name.
Yeah, they switched around in the books. But like there's a couple of key characters that are like really similar. It's like the first time I read The Hobbit and the guy goes through the list of all the dwarves, like a Biffo Boffo, and it's like, what are you doing to me, man? Like just, like come on. I'm never gonna be able to keep all these guys straight. And so like that kind of stuff I always find a little bit tedious. Whereas, you know, you've got Ciri, Geralt, and Yennefer are very distinct names. They're very easy to, I mean, obviously very different characters, but like I don't remember his name, but the mage that helps with the kingdom of something or other. What's Ciri's kingdom?
Sintra. It's Mousek.
Mousek. Like, again, very distinct dude. Like, you can kind of pick him out. Like that kind of stuff was straightforward and has a unique name. I mean, it's been several weeks since I've watched it, but like stuff like that I found more unique. Whereas if all the witches had like different names that were similar, like it would become confusing. So but anyway, I have a hard time recommending it to people. Like my dad asked about it. My dad loves fantasy stuff. And he's just like, oh, so if you watched The Witcher, like, did you like it? And I was like, I mean, it's one of those things where like, I know dad's going to watch it. And the first thing he's going to do is like email me and be like, what the hell is going on? And I'm going to be like, I don't know. You know, it's kind of a hard sell. And I think, like, looking back, I didn't really care so much about Geralt in the story. It was Ciri. That's why I kept watching. I wanted to know what happened to the little girl. Like, that's what kept me. Because also her story, to me, was presented in the clearest chronological order. Whereas it was not clear when they were bouncing around, especially once you realize that Yennefer through magic looks the same for 40 years. And he's like, oh, for Pete's sake. Like, I mean, now I'm never going to know what time it is. And at least with Ciri, like everything that's happening to her, not only, like you said, you know, I guess it's presented in chronological order. I don't remember it feeling out of order for Ciri, but it's happening within a year. Like everything that happens to her is happening in a very short time span compared to Geralt and Yennefer. And so that's probably why I latched onto that. And again, I also really like her acting and thought she was cool with the mysterious powers. And I want to be careful that I don't sound like too much of a hypocrite either, because I very often on the show saying I really hate it when media beats us over the head with story. And I feel like this maybe goes just too far in the other direction. Where it's like, hey, here's the story. It's in a script and we didn't staple it. And they just kind of like throw it off a cliff and then throw you after it. And it's like, here, catch what you can on the way down. It's like, what? Like, how am I supposed to follow this? It does, however, make me want to read the books, right? Like, I mean, it looks and feels like a cool world that I would like to be part of, you know, and I feel like enough people like you who have that knowledge are coming in with the show and being like, oh, no, but, right? Like there's an explanation for everything. So I'm just like, okay, so they've got something, right? So it's one of those things where like, I don't necessarily think that the season two is going to be at the top of my list, but I'm at least curious to see if they heed, you know, the feedback and present things a little bit differently, because it's a world that I'd like to watch, right? Like it's a show that I'd like to get into.
My understanding how it's going to go, because this whole season was meant to be like the prequel. It's meant to be the buildup of it,
mm-hmm.
the exposition, if you will. I don't know. And like it or hate it, all the information you need to get started is there.
Is there, right.
All the information, whether it's presented out of order or not, all the information about who the people are at this point, how they got to where they are, is now there. Mm. So series two is meant to jump off directly from the end of, like, it's meant, like, Geralt and Ciri are meant to be together. And, when Ciri asks about Yennefer does her whole chaos magic thing, burns Nilfgaard forces alive, and disappears. So no one's really sure where Yennefer is. Geralt's already had his interactions with Yennefer. They're kind of tied together by the djinn, so that he made a wish to genie that they would always be together,
mm-hmm.
which is how they kept finding each other. Ciri is able to tap into that chaos a little bit, is able to see things. So she probably saw that whole event in a dream, or overheard someone yell something about Yennefer, and is now asking, like, knows that he's tied to her somehow. Ciri's magical in a way that, like, again, I don't know if they're following. The games are sort of a separate entity, because in the games, Ciri is
everything that I've seen from.
She's like 13 when you first see her in the third game. She's a baby. She's very young. And then by the end of it, she's like 18. So it is a little bit different in terms of timeline in the game. But in this one, she's obviously older. Still a child, but still older.
Yeah. I was surprised. The actor being 18, 19, I think is playing younger than she, like, I think she was supposed to be cast as like a 14 to 17 year old, like somewhere mm-hmm. in that range.
But she also looks very young as well.
Oh yes. She's also a very petite person. So she can pass as kind of like Maisie Williams, you know, 20 year old playing a 14 year old in Game of Thrones sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause she's tiny.
Yeah. 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 So, I can see why they cast her that way. And from what I've heard from just, again, interviews with Cavill, I follow him on Instagram, so you see this kind of stuff from promotion pop up. And he, every time he's talking about the show, he references the books. He says that he plays the game and was inspired by it, and, like, you know, led him to then go read the books. But he said whenever he talks about the show, he's always referencing the books. He never really brings up the game very much. So,
and that's what this one is meant to be for. Yeah. A lot of people were complaining. It's like, Geralt in the game carries two swords with him all the time. One's silver, one's just steel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a game thing only.
Right.
It's a mechanic. In the show, he always keeps his silver blade on Roach.
Right. Well, I think we should probably wrap things up. Brings us into the Internet Minute, and that is brought to you by you. The Citadel Cafe is 100% listener supported. If you are getting value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Joining at any level will, of course, get you an invite to the member-only Discord server, where we talk about things like The Witcher, Lego, Christmas recipes, all that kind of good stuff throughout the week. There are multiple levels with different rewards, like Discord roles and, of course, the bonus audio episodes at the barista level. Current patron count is at 16. We would love to make that one more before next month. So if you'd like to become number 17, head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. My internet pick this week is something I teased very early on in the show. If you're still with us, then I'm going to talk about Satisfactory, which is a game that I picked up on the Epic Game Store over the holidays. Now, it's in early access. It's still in development. So there are some bugs. Not too many, but I've been experiencing them as I've been playing through it. It is a industrial building production puzzle game with like a little bit of survival game thrown in, but it's also very, very pretty. It is the kind of thing where you are put on an alien planet by a mining company called Fixit, but it's spelt like F-I-C-S-T-I-T or something. And you have to then create a factory by mining resources. So you have to achieve some goals, build a hub, mine your first bit of iron, create a conveyor belt, all that kind of stuff. It gets quickly more complicated because in order to achieve your employment goals, you have to send stuff up a space elevator to the Fixit Corporation, and they need things like computers and motors. And so you have to manufacture all of these things from the raw materials rich on this planet that you've been put on. Everything surrounds the idea of industry and your job. Fixit is less concerned with your safety and more concerned with damaging their property. So anytime you're in peril and you might die, you get a warning like, warning, Fixit property may be damaged, not you're going to die. It's like, the equipment that you're carrying belongs to us. Please don't hurt it. You know, like stuff like that. So it's got a really kind of grim, dry sense of humor. There is a computer assistant called Ada, the administrative digital assistant, similar to Portal, you know, with GLaDOS. And so she's got snarky remarks and stuff like that. Like, you know, you could use this computer interface for things like monitoring your production or internet dating, which we don't encourage. We're always watching, stuff like that. So it becomes a really fun, a fun romp to get in and play around. It gets very complicated very quickly, and I like it. It's, you have to mine iron and copper and limestone and coal. You have to power everything. And as you learn more skills and unlock more tech trees, then you also put more demand on your power grid. And so there's a lot of back and forth. But then you kind of couple it all with the kind of building that you would have in a game like Minecraft. So you have to lay down a production floor. You can build these different contraptions, and they all feed into one another at different speeds. And so, like, if your iron node is producing 60 iron ore per minute, and you have a smelter that only smelts 30, then you have to split that track into two smelters to make sure that you're being the most efficient. Stuff like that. I really enjoy it. It's also just, like I said, very, very pretty. There is this crazy manta ray that flies around in the sky. It's the size of a 747. It affects nothing. It just kind of goes by with this big kind of like audio, like a whoosh, you know, but it's a slow moving kind of like a whale flying through the sky, right? And it's beautiful. And my stream, we've got this moon manta meme. So whenever it goes by, we kind of pause and be like, oh, look, moon manta. Like, just, it's just really weird. All the creatures in the game are some sort of strange animal hybrid thing. There's like these things that look like fish cats with scorpion tails, and they don't like you very much. And there's all those kind of different stuff. There is a little bit of survival. What I like about it, though, is that nothing attacks you at your factory. It only attacks, like, animals only attack if you're out adventuring looking for more stuff, you know? And so they only become aggressive if you're kind of like out there in the world. They don't, you're not constantly defending your base, which is nice because it means that it's a very chill game. You're not always running around shooting stuff. You're more problem solving and building. That's kind of like the main aspect. I would say that when you are fighting animals, it's not the best experience because it's a first person, and it's for the most part, it's a melee game. So I find that very difficult to judge the distance between you and the thing in front of you. However, once you start getting upgrades, you can also upgrade. I want to say weapons. They're more like tools that they kind of hint, by the way, here's a cool rebar, you know, gun that's meant to, like, you know, secure construction facility stuff, but you could shoot stuff with it. So it's not really a gun with bullets. It just shoots metal rods, but it's meant to be like a construction equipment that says, hey, by the way, you could maybe sort of kind of use this as a weapon. So stuff like that is cool, but it's also like single load. So it's like a one shot thing. You can't, like, it's not a machine gun or anything like that. So it doesn't become a first person shooter, which I'm glad it doesn't. However, wandering through these really magical, cool purple alien forest things, there's spiders, and they're a lot faster than you. They're the size of a small dog, and they make no noise. They just skitter. And so you're playing headphones and you hear, you're like, oh, what the hell is that? you turn around to have this thing coming at you. You ever see those?
It reminds me of like the clickers from The Last of Us.
Yeah. So it's stuff like it's like face huggers from aliens, like anything that skitters along the floor faster than you can move. And it's just like, oh gosh, like why is it always spiders in these games? Anyway, so I had my last stream is where I stopped. I haven't played it in a couple days now, but I was streaming this a lot over the holidays and I had a lot of fun with it. I'm still going to continue on with it. But the last episode was pretty action packed. I died for the first time after 8 or 9 streams, which is pretty good actually. So it's not a game that puts you in mortal peril all the time, which is nice. So I died not to these spiders actually. I died to some gas, which the game didn't clearly tell me that I was driving through, which is unfortunate. But yeah. So I had to turn around and face these spiders. So that clip of me dealing with these things for the first time is in that episode 8, I think. And man, like it's definitely experience. So I'm at this stage now where I've kind of used all of the resources available to me in my immediate area and reached the point where the game says, okay, you need now crude oil, rubber, and circuit boards to move on in the tech tree. And I am nowhere near any of that. So I now have to go adventure, probably build a second base and then try to connect the two. And there's all these different features that they've come up with. It's really worth checking out. The trailers are really fun. Like I said, I've got 6 or 8 streams up now. And so if people are curious, you can go check that out. It's been a really fun way to go. I think it was episode 5 where I really started to feel like I had a solid handle on the game and I had played between a couple of streams. And so at the beginning of episode 5, I kind of give like a brief rundown of like what we've done so far. So it's a good kind of like jumping in point to be like, okay, so I'll get a little bit of an explanation before we move on. So yeah, I would highly recommend it. It's $30 regular price. I've got it for $16 on Boxing Week sale. But if you keep an eye on it on the Epic Game Store, I'm sure it'll be on sale again.
Interesting. I'll have to give that one a check out.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. A little bit longer than usual, but Megan and I haven't talked for a while, and we had a lot to cover over the holiday break.
The cats thing derailed us.
No, it's fine. Derailed by cats. What? You know you're talking to Megan when. The CitadelCafe.com is an excellent spot to go to find links to all the different stuff that we talked about. The show music was, of course, composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Hopefully going to be talking about The Rise of Skywalker in the upcoming week, so if you have thoughts and feelings, please let us know. Send us an email. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook, or subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify. But word of mouth is, by way, the easiest way to support the show. It is 100% free to poke a friend in the arm and say, hey, you should listen to this. So please go ahead and do that. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. And if you're interested in hiring me, then just drop me a line there. You can check out my other podcast all about Minecraft at thespawnchunks.com. We're going to be back next week. That's Monday. I believe that's January 12th with a new episode as well. And twitch.tv/joelduggan is where I'm going to point you for my current, I guess, home away from home. When I'm not doing work, I'm streaming on Twitch. So Megan, where can people find you and what you do online?
People can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at omegantownsend and twitch.tv/omegantownsend as well.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick 2.